स्वामी निखिल आनंद इज अ डिसाइपल ऑफ जगत गुरु श्री कृपालू जी महाराज. ही रिजाइड्स एट राधा माधव धाम इन ऑस्टिन टेक्सास, विच इज द US आश्रम ऑफ जगत गुरु कृपालू परिषद. ही ट्रेवल्स अमेरिका प्रीचिंग द फिलोसफी ऑफ सनातन धर्म एज टॉट बाय श्री कृपालू जी महाराज. इन दिस सीरीज स्वामी निखिल आनंद टेल्स द श्री कृष्ण लीलाज ऑफ द भागवतम फ्रॉम हिज अपियरेंस एंड बर्थडे सेलिब्रेशन इन गोकुल up until Govardhan Leela when he was 7 years of age. In addition, he explains the effect of listening to Shri Krishna Leelas and how meditating on the Leelas is an important part of the path of bhakti.
Shri Krishna descended on the earth planet more than 5,000 years ago, and he stayed on this earth planet for more than 125 years. So during that time, in the beginning, after the first night, after he came from Mathura, he spent the first 11 and a half years in Braj. Braj is the area, it's like a district, which includes Govardhan, Barsana village, Nandagaon, Gokul, ponds like Radha Kund, Kusum Sarovar, Krishna Kund, all of these Leelasthalis of Radha and Krishna. So in that Braj area, Braj Mandal, Shri Krishna played. He did all of his childhood Leelas. We learned yesterday that Shri Krishna is Swayam Bhagawan. All of the other forms of God are within Krishna. It's Krishna himself who takes the form of Vishnu, Shiva, Durga, Ram. Anyone who worships God anywhere in this world, Shri Krishna says in the Gita, they're all worshiping me because there's only one God, and I come to them in the form that they desire. So Shri Krishna is Swayam Bhagawan, and he himself is the base and the master of all the divine powers. Yet out of all of those powers, the most private power is the power of divine love, his prema shakti. Bhagawan has three most prominent powers. It's called Maya Shakti, Jeev Shakti, and Yoga Maya or Swarup Shakti. So out of those three, Maya Shakti is called his Bahiranga power, which means his external power. Yoga Maya or Swarup Shakti is called his Antaranga Shakti, his internal power. And Jeev Shakti is in between, Tatastha Shakti. So Jeev Shakti is all of us, all of the uncountable souls in existence. We all together are called Krishna's Jeev Shakti. Maya Shakti is a lifeless energy which has taken the form of this universe that we see around us. But that Maya Shakti is also eternal. With God's help, with Krishna's help, it evolves into the form of the universe. And then when he decides, then it dissolves into absolute abstract energy, Mool Prakriti Maya. But the Maya Shakti is eternal. It's God's power. Souls are also eternal. And his Yoga Maya or his Swarup Shakti, that's his internal power. That is his private power. It is this Swarup Shakti, it is through this Swarup Shakti that Bhagawan does all of his Leelas and all of his actions. It's through that power that he creates the universe, maintains the universe, destroys the universe. It is through that power that he's omnipresent in the universe, It is through that power that he keeps track of all the actions of all the souls while simultaneously being absorbed in his own divine bliss. This is all through the power of his Swarup Shakti. That Swarup Shakti is divided into three aspects because God is Sat, Chit, Anand. So you have Sat Swarup Shakti, Chit Swarup Shakti, and Anand Swarup Shakti. So those three aspects of Swarup Shakti are called Sandhini, Samvit, and Ahladini. Ahladini, Sandhini, Samvit, Vayeka, Sarvasanshraye, Vishnu Puran says that your personal power, Yoga Maya or Swarup Shakti, is divided into three aspects. The Almighty, Sandhini, that's what you heard about yesterday. I referred to her as Aishwarya Shakti. That's the power that makes God Almighty. Samvit Shakti is his Gyan Shakti. Through that Samvit Shakti, he is all-knowing. And his Ahladini Shakti is the power of bliss. Through that power, God is always blissful. So the Ahladini Shakti is supreme. Out of those three, the Chit, the Sat and Chit aspects, they're absorbed into Anand. So Ahladini Shakti, the bliss, that is God's supreme power. Yet that bliss also has an essence that is called Prem. Ahladini Shakti Tera Paramasar Taro Prema Naam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhuji says that the absolute essence of God's bliss is His love. So the essence of bliss is love. The Sarbhut Tattva of Ahladini Shakti is Prem. Prem Tattva or Prema Shakti. And it is that prem which keeps Bhagawan under bondage. Bhagawan is not under the bondage of Maya. We are under the bondage of Maya, all of us. God is the controller of Maya. So this Maya that keeps us all under control, makes us dance to its tune, that does not control God. God controls Maya. But there is a power that makes God dance the same way Maya makes us dance. That is the Sarbhut Tattva of Ahladini Shakti, Prem. Prem is such a great power that even though God is the owner of that power, Prem is beyond God. Because under the effect or under the spell of that Prem, God becomes paradheen. Shri Krishna becomes subservient to his own devotees. It is seen in Braj that to please the gopis, who are also his devotees, Shri Krishna is, you know, you can say taking orders from them. They're saying, okay, now Kanha, young 3-4-year-old Krishna, you dance, okay? We'll clap and you start dancing. So little Krishna is trying to please the gopis by dancing to their clapping. It is these gopis that Uddhavji Paramahansa says, Asa maho charan renu jusha mahansyam vrindavane kimapi gul malatau shadhinam yadus Tyajan svajanamarya pathancha hitva bhejur mukunda padvim shruti bhirvimrigyam Bhagavat. He says to Krishna, will you give me the boon of being born in Braj as a creeper, a flowering plant or a bush, so that when the gopis walk by, I might get the chance that the dust from their feet will come up in the air a little bit and come on my body, on my head, if I'm born there in Braj as any plant. He says it is that Padraj of the gopis which is even sought after by the Richas of the Vedas, but they have not attained it yet. So high and so great are the gopis. So the gopis, like Mother Yashoda and Nanda Baba, like the Gwalbals and the gopis, they were all saints, Mahapurush. So they were all beyond Maya. They were not like us, even though they were here in this world, they were not under Maya. They were here in this world, but beyond Maya. Maya could not do anything to them. They were beyond desires, anger, greed, jealousy, because all of those are the children of Maya. As long as a soul is under Maya, they're bound to experience the effects of all of these things which we would call negative emotions. As long as a soul is under Maya, all of those negativities are going to be there. But once Maya is gone, then all of them are gone as well. Because if you get rid of the root cause, then the karana goes as well, the effect goes as well. So the gopis, Gwalbals, Mother Yashoda, Nanda Baba, they were all beyond Maya. And they came here with Krishna on this earth planet to take part in his leelas. They were all in possession of that prema. Upon God realization, when the heart of a devotee is fully purified by doing chintan of these very leelas that we're talking about this week, then your guru, your God-realized guru, maybe a gopi who came on the earth planet, maybe a Gwalbal, some saint who has attained the love of Radha Krishna can grace you to receive that same prema. Having received that prema, Bhagwan comes under you, because Bhagwan is under prema. So if you get that prema, then Bhagwan is under you. So it's not that Krishna, there was no kind of material emotions between the gopis and Krishna. There were divine emotions, you can say. And Krishna desired to serve those gopis because they had surrendered their heart and soul to him. They had given themselves totally to Krishna. Therefore, it was very natural for Krishna to want to give himself to his own devotees. So sometimes he would serve the gopis. I'm talking about young Krishna. Maybe they'd say, "Oh, Kanha, bring me that stool. Or bring me my chappal. Or bring those weights. We need to weigh, put something on the balance." And little Krishna's walking and bringing it happily. Sometimes he would try to make the gopis laugh. Little 4-year-old Krishna, he would act like a pahalwan. You know how before a fight, when they're trying to challenge someone, they'll slap their thighs like that? Little Krishna would do that, and the gopis would just watch and laugh. So, in this way, Krishna rejoiced all the residents of Braj. Now, one day, it happened that this old lady, who was a seller of fruit, she came to Gokul village. And she was just calling out, you know, "Oh, somebody, come and buy fruit, come and buy fruit. I have nice, fresh fruit." Nobody was around that area. It was early in the morning, and she was passing by the house of Nanda Baba. So Shri Krishna heard. And he grabbed a handful. He didn't have any money or anything. He grabbed a handful of grain. And he went running out to that elderly lady who had her fruit basket. And on the way, you know, because little kids aren't really good at carrying something like grain in their hands, so he probably had his fingers open a little and a little space here. So by the time he got there, it was like a few pieces of grain left in his hand. And he came in great excitement to her that, "Oh yes, you take this grain as a payment and I'll take your fruit." So she just smiled. She was so touched by Krishna's coming to her to buy the fruit. So she just gave, you know, as much as Krishna could carry and took those few grains of wheat from him. And Krishna went back in his house, and when she turned around, then the basket which had been full of fruit, which she had given to him, was now full of jewels, precious jewels. So through this Leela, we see that it doesn't pay to have a bargaining nature with Krishna. He is willing to give everything to us. He's willing to give his own self to us. But if we say, you know, think of it like this. He's proposing a straight up trade. You give everything you have to me, and I'll give everything I have to you. You give yourself to me, and I'll give myself to you. But from eternity until now, all of us have declined his offer. Politely declined, rudely declined, however we did it. Amne naimana. We said, you know what, I'm not sure I trust you. I think perhaps I'll offer you something, but not everything. Meaning, I'll love you with part of my heart, but I won't give you my whole heart. I'll maintain some attachment over here as well. I'll offer something to you, but not everything. This is bargaining. This means we don't fully trust Krishna. We have to have full faith in him. That's called surrender. So the moment a soul surrenders, he gives his everything. What did we actually offer him? Let's say someone offered him their body, mind, possessions, everything. So what is the value of that actually compared to what we're getting back? There's no comparison. Our body is mayic. It's of no value to God. God has everything divine. Our mind, full of uncountable lifetimes of past good and many bad actions, so uncountable sins in here as well. We offer that mind to him. Our possessions, also mayic material. So, truthfully speaking, it's of no value to him whatsoever, not for him personally. Yet he's so gracious that he says, you have nothing else in your possession, so just offer that. Whatever you have, give that to me. I'll clean it, make it divine, and give it back to you. So you give me all your material, body, mind, everything, and I'll give you everything divine in return. I'll give you my own self in return. This is what a soul has to do. Simply reach that state of surrender to Sri Krishna. So one day, Nanda Baba and the elders of Gokul village, they got together and they had some discussions because they were thinking that, you know, since Krishna was born here, so many things have happened. There have been demons and demonesses who came and, you know, it seems like maybe we should think about moving somewhere else for the safety of all of our families and for Sri Krishna. So the eldest and wisest of all of them, Upanand, he suggested, there's a place called Vrindavan. Over there, there's so much fresh green grass for the cows to eat. Beautiful Yamuna River is nearby. We can live at peace over there. We'll be so happy if we go over there in Vrindavan. So they all decided, right then and there, that very day, they packed up. A lot of the gopis and gopis, they lived in what you could say temporary residences, because they used to move around according to where the grass was green, where the cows and the calves needed to graze. So they packed up everything, all their possessions, their homes, everything, put it on the bullock carts, and they set out for Vrindavan. Now in the Bhagavatam, Vrindavan, Nowadays we refer to Vrindavan as one small village, which is the center of where Maharas Leela happened. But in Bhagavatam, Vrindavan is kind of a bigger general area. So they actually moved to what is nowadays called Nandagaon, which is a small hill, a little bit, you know, away from the Gokul and Mathura area. So they moved to Nandagaon. And they set up their village. Even if you go there today, you can see the hill. And on top of the hill, there's a Balaram and Krishna Mandir. So not long after that, that happened after Krishna was 4 years old. Up until 4 years, they stayed in Gokul. Krishna started grazing the calves after that. Up until then, he was too small. His mother wouldn't let him. No, you can't go out all day long with your friends and just grazing the calves here and there. No, you stay in the house. But then eventually he got old enough that they said, okay, you take not the big cows, the calves. You and your friends of the same age go out, not far, just, you know, they used to take them just if the Goshala was right here, just out around, you know, within eyesight, not too far. They would bring whatever they needed to spend the whole day. They wouldn't come back to the house during the day. They'd bring their lunch. They'd bring whatever they needed to have fun. They'd bring their flutes and horns. Not only Krishna played flute, the Gwalbals also played flute. Of course, nobody could match Krishna, but they all loved playing flutes and horns and all kinds of instruments. They also used to like to play with slingshots, as boys do, so they'd bring those. And, you know, it's not like they have to watch the calves every moment of the day. The calves are grazing over here, so what are the boys doing? They're playing. So sometimes they'd play games like a couple, maybe Krishna and a couple other Gwalbals, they would pretend they're cows or bulls, and they'd get down on their hands and knees and they'd start bellowing at each other and pretend that they're fighting. Just like you see boys doing, Krishna did the same kinds of leelas with the Gwalbals. Sometimes some Gwalbal would find a monkey, go and pull its tail, make faces at it, you know, see what kind of a reaction he could get out of the monkey, or go up in the trees with the monkeys jumping from branch to branch and tree to tree, or sometimes they would imitate a peacock or, imitate a hunts, like a swan walking. Some Gwalbal would go walking beside the hunts, imitating him. They'd imitate the calls of the peacocks, the calls of all the other birds, like the cuckoo birds, and they would just play it like boys in this way. So there were a couple of amazing events during this time when they were still quite young boys, but old enough to be out grazing the calves. One time a demon named Vatsasur came. So this demon came, sent by Kans, with the aim of killing Krishna. So he just came as a calf and joined in with the other calves. Now, Krishna noticed him right away and knew who he was, but he didn't want any of the Gwalbals to get scared, and he also didn't want that demon to know that he recognized him. So he just signaled to Balaram like this, like with his eyes, like, you know, bowing, you know, right? So then they signaled like that to each other, and Krishna just pretended like he was attracted to that calf, like, oh, look how beautiful this calf is, and he made his way over to that demon. And then small little Krishna just grabbed that demon by the two hind legs and tail, twirled him around like that, and just sent him up in the air. And he went and landed on some apple trees, and that was how that demon got liberated. Of course, when Krishna kills any demon, it's more than just killing. He's actually liberating that demon and sending him to his divine abode. Another time, a demon named Bakasur came as a bagula, a crane. You know, the crane, like a heron, goes on the edge of the pond and then sits there waiting for, a fish or a frog to come by. So he sits very still, just waiting. So the boys were out grazing the calves and they saw over there on the edge of that pond a huge bagula. So big it looked like a piece of a mountain had fallen off and was standing there. So they were all amazed. And of course Krishna recognized that this is a demon, Bakasur, who's come. And Bakasur was actually the brother of Putana and the older brother of Aghasur, who you haven't heard about yet. So Bakasur, as soon as Krishna came close, he just reached down. He had a big, long, pointy beak, and he just swallowed Krishna. Not swallowed down his throat, but grabbed him into his mouth. So Krishna, of course, all Balaram and all the Gwalbals, they were so worried seeing Krishna, the love of their life, swallowed by this huge crane. They were all basically fainted in grief seeing that happen. But inside there, what Krishna did, he made himself so hot that just like burning through the top of the mouth of that bagula, Bakasur. So he just had to open his mouth and spit Krishna out. So as soon as Krishna got spit out, then he tried to, attack him, and Krishna just grabbed his beak like that, and that was the end of that demon. That demon was also liberated. So things like this kept happening, these amazing events. And then, seeing that Krishna was fine, the Gwalbals and Balaram felt better. And they all came home that day and they told their parents about this amazing event. So everybody was amazed to hear all the time of all the amazing things happening around Krishna or being done by Krishna. One morning, Shri Krishna got up really early before any of his friends. And he came by with like a bugle. And he went by all of his friends' houses and just playing on some tune on that bugle, he woke them up and made them know that, I'm calling you. Come on, let's go out. So early in the morning, Krishna rounded up his friends in this way. Hundreds of Gwalbals came. And they came prepared for a nice long day out. They came with lunch that their mothers had prepared for them. They came with, their flute and their horns and everything they needed to spend the day. So there Krishna had thousands of calves that he was taking. And then each Gwalbal would emerge from his house and all of his calves would also join into Krishna's herd. So in this way, they all went out in a huge herd of calves and all the whole gang of Gwalbals and Krishna. And there's a beautiful description in the Bhagavatam of how these boys, while they spent their day out grazing the calves, what that was like. What was that sakhyaras like? It gives us an idea, what would it be like to have Shri Krishna as a boyhood friend? So it's told that, sometimes one of the boys, because they all had sticks for grazing, all the cowherd boys would have a stick either for, making the cows go in the direction they want or just for walking. And on the end of that stick, they would have like a jhola that was tied up like this that had their lunch in it and everything they needed. So they'd carry it over their shoulder like that. So sometimes one boy would come by and snatch the stick and the other boy's lunch. And then, he'd toss it to another friend. So then that friend who got his stick stolen, he'd run over to get it from there and then he'd toss it to another friend. So they'd play like we call monkey in the middle, like kids play here. Same thing Krishna and his friends would play. Sometimes Krishna would go on ahead. And then the boys would have a competition. They would try to run and see who could be the first to touch Krishna, who would reach him first. Sometimes one of them would see a peacock and they'd go up and they'd just start imitating the peacock. whatever the peacock did, spreading his tail, dancing, calling. So some boys would be doing that, playing with the peacocks. Some boys would be playing with the monkeys. Some boys would be imitating the walk of the hunts. Some boys would be playing in the water on the edge of Yamuna, jumping with some frogs or imitating the sound that the frogs make. In this way, they passed their days just playing like boys do. And those boys who got to play with Krishna, they got to enjoy that prem. Krishna is giving prem through doing all of those leelas. He's giving sakhya ras, the bliss of that friend, that fraternal relationship with Krishna. They'd come out, and even though they were, their mothers had already dressed them and decorated them with all kinds of ornaments and gold and jewels, yet once they were out of the house, the boys would find some different colored feathers to put in their headband, and they'd find some flowers here, and maybe even some berries to decorate with. They'd find some different colored clay, like red colored clay, yellow colored clay from the earth. And then they'd paint their faces or paint pretty designs on their arms. So in this way, they enjoyed sakhya ras, and Krishna gave sakhya ras, and he also enjoyed sakhya ras, because that's the way that it works. Shri Krishna gives his prem to his devotees, and his devotees multiply it and give it back to him, and he multiplies it and gives it back to them. And in this way, pratikchana vardhamanam. Narad ji, in his Narad Bhakti Darshan, says this prem between Krishna and his devotees goes on multiplying forever, growing and growing and growing. So on this day, while the boys were out with Krishna grazing the calves, they decided, let's go down. Krishna suggested, let's go down to the bank of Yamuna, and we'll let the calves drink for a while, and we'll get some water there too. So they went down, the calves drank, then they were eating some grass, and Krishna and all the Gwalbals also drank the sweet water of Yamuna. Now, the younger brother of Bakasur and Putana, Aghasur, he came and he decided he wanted revenge on Krishna for killing his siblings. So he went on the path or on the road where the Gwalbals were heading. And in the form of a huge snake, he positioned himself just where they were going to come in his direction. He was said to be 2 miles long, a 2 mile long snake. And he opened his mouth. So his bottom lip, bottom part of his mouth was on the ground with his tongue coming out like an inviting pathway. And with his mouth open, it said that his top lip was up in the clouds, like a huge mountain. So it looked like a huge cave. The Gwalbals came first. They were ahead of Krishna. And they started talking amongst each other that, look at this. Another amazing feature of Vrindavan. Look at this. It just never ceases to, amaze. This huge cave, it looks like the mouth of a snake. Isn't that amazing? Yes, yes, it is amazing. Look at that. You see those white rocks up there in the top of the cave? Don't those look like a snake's fangs? Yes, yes, they do. They really do. That's really interesting. And this tongue, this pathway coming down here, that's like a red pathway going up into the mouth of the cave. Doesn't that look like the tongue of the snake? Well, yes, really it does. And do you feel that hot air coming out of the cave? It seems like the breath of a poisonous snake. Yes, it really does seem like that. Yeah, well, why don't we go in and see what it's like? this amazing cave. Yes, yes. Well, what if it's a snake? Oh, well, we have Krishna with us. No problem. What to worry. So let's go check it out. And all the boys enter into the mouth of Aghasur. But Aghasur hasn't closed his mouth yet because he's waiting for the one he wants is Krishna. His plan is, I want to kill all the Gwalbals and Krishna because I want to get revenge for the death of my siblings. So Krishna's looking and he sees the whole situation. And now he's trying to think how to kill this Aghasur without killing my friends as well. I have to figure out something, some way of saving them and killing Aghasur. So he thought, and then he also entered into the mouth of Aghasur. And all of his friends were lying, looking dead, lying there due to the poison of the snake. And the snake, Aghasur, closed his mouth and tried to chew up Krishna and his friends. But what Krishna did, as big and huge as that snake was, Krishna just, once he was standing in his mouth, he just made his body grow taller and taller and taller and taller until he burst out the top. And in that way, Aghasur was killed, and Krishna, using his divine power, brought all of his friends onto the outside, and he just revived them. And they all came back to life and realized, oh, Krishna saved us again. How many times has he done that? So, seeing this Leela, our Brahma, he thought, this amazing boy, can he really be God? Brahma should know better. He's a divine personality. He's the creator of our Brahmand. But he decided, I'm going to do something to test Krishna's power. So he came, and after they escaped from Aghasur, there was still quite a bit of the day left. So Krishna, he suggested to his friends, why don't we have lunch? At this point, Shukdevji tells Parikshit that this whole event with Aghasur, it happened when Krishna was 5 years old. But the Gwalbals never told their parents about it until they were 6 years old. So Parikshit said, how did that happen? Why did they not, speak to their parents for a whole year? So he said, I'll tell you. Brahma came and he saw this scene with Krishna sitting down to have lunch with his friends. So they sat with Krishna in the middle and then like concentric rings of Gwalbals around him. So a tight ring of Gwalbals sitting like shoulder to shoulder, getting as close into Krishna as possible. Then when no more could fit in that ring, then outside of them, another ring of Gwalbals. And another. So in that way, Krishna was surrounded on all sides by the Gwalbals. And they all took their bag full of all whatever food their mother had given them for that day. And they opened it up and they started eating. Someone used some big leaf as a plate. Someone used a fruit as a plate. Someone used a big flower as a plate. And they all just started eating. And that scene was another beautiful scene of Sakyubhav, Leela. The description is so, Krishna's making all of his friends laugh. He's talking, he's joking. So they're eating, but they're not eating politely. They're talking, they're joking, they're laughing. Some of the Gwalbals are laughing so hard that the food is coming out of their mouth. They're rolling on the ground. It's like really Krishna and his friends are having a big fun time. They're sharing food around. Krishna's taking food out of his friend's mouth, or his friends eat something and say, that's really good. Here, Kanha, you have some. So Brahma is seeing this and he says, this Supreme God, he's allowing these boys to feed him their own jutha, their own half-eaten food. How is it so? So instead of enjoying the ras of that Sakhya Leela, Sakhya Bhav Leela, Brahma applied his intellect and he said, why would God be behaving in a childlike way like that? I thought God was supposed to be all-powerful, all-knowing. So instead of enjoying the charm of that Leela, he tried to analyze it and he failed. He failed to realize the greatness of what he was seeing. That these are saints, these Gwalbal boys are saints who have a higher status than Brahma himself. He didn't realize that. So Brahma decided to give Krishna a little test. And in doing so, he revealed to the whole world the greatness of Sri Krishna. So while the boys were eating, they noticed that the calves had basically disappeared. They'd gone far off into the jungle in search of green grass. So all the boys started to get a little worried, and Krishna said, no, you guys keep eating. I'll just go and bring them. You keep enjoying your lunch. So Krishna went off. And he went farther and farther and farther and couldn't find those calves because Brahma had actually taken the calves using his power and he had put them in some cave, kind of in a spell, you can say, just sleeping in the cave. So Krishna couldn't find them anywhere. And then when he came back to tell his friends that I can't find the calves, his friends were also gone. Because Brahma had taken those Gwalbals as well, put them in a trance and kept them in the same cave with all the calves. So then Krishna just thought for one second and he knew, this is Brahma. He's trying to play with me. So in order to do several things, there's several reasons for what happened next, Krishna multiplied himself into the form of all of his friends and all of the calves. Exactly in every detail, he reproduced himself. So just like Sri Dama, one of his friends. How did Sri Dama wear a headband? What kind of decorations did he have with the clay? Where did he have a feather? What kind of clothes was he wearing? How tall was he? How did he walk? How did he talk? What mannerisms did he have? Same thing for every single friend. Dhansuk, Mansuk, all of his Gwalbal friends. Exactly. Every one of them. And the same thing with the calves. Each and every calf, Krishna took the form exactly how that calf looked, walked, behaved, and then he went home that night. So in the form of each Gwalbal and each calf, he returned to his parents. So each calf went back to his mother, where his mother was in the Goshala. Each boy went back to the house where he stayed. And those parents, not the cows and not the gopis and gopes, none of them realized that this is Krishna. They all just saw their boy come home and the cows saw their baby come home. And they didn't realize it was Krishna, but there was some special attraction in their own son that they hadn't realized before. Like seeing their son come home, they felt an excitement. And they had never felt that way for their son before. And living in this way, Krishna lived in the house of those gopis and gopis as their own son and in the form of those calves as well for a whole year. Every day he'd go out grazing the calves. Every day he'd come home in the evening, just like nothing had changed. During this time, those gopis and gopis, their love for their son was growing more and more and more. They were getting more and more attached to him. One time it happened, Balaram saw. See, even this whole year, Balaram, who himself is another form of Krishna, He's an avatar of Shri Krishna. Balaram did not know what had happened. Balaram was going out every day grazing the calves with Krishna and all of the Gwalbals, not realizing that they were all Krishna and all the calves were Krishna as well. But one day this event happened. They were all the calves and Balaram and Krishna and all the Gwalbals that were actually Krishna. Everyone was Krishna except Balaram was his normal self. They were coming, grazing, and they were kind of approaching Govardhan Hill. And up on top of Govardhan Hill, the big grown-up cows were there with the Gwalbal, the Gwals, the Gopes, the parents, you know, the fathers of Braj. So they were up on top of Govardhan Hill. And now when those cows saw their calves down below, even though it was such a treacherous path, like you can say there was no path there, those cows just saw, and they just ran down the mountain to get to their calves. They were so vyakul. Their ears were up, their tail was up, and they just ran bellowing until they got to their calves. And when they reached there, then they were just licking them so much. It was like they wanted to swallow them whole. They were so anxious to be with them. They were so feeling so much love towards them. And then those gopes, they were kind of, you know, first embarrassed that, because when the cows started running, they were tried everything to stop them. You know, what are you doing? Where are you going? Stop. The cows didn't listen. Not even one of them. So the gopes were feeling, you know, angry that you disobeyed us. You didn't follow our orders like you do every day. But then when the gopes got down there and they saw their sons, they completely forgot about the anger for the cows. And they just ran and grabbed their sons and embraced them. So Balaram is watching all of this and he's thinking to himself, what is going on? What, for the last year I've been seeing this, that, you know, they're loving their sons too much. It's becoming more and more and more. And same thing with the cows for the calves. What is going on? And then he said to Krishna, because he looked with his, once he asked that question, then you can say he looked with his jnana drishti and he saw Krishna himself is every one of those Gwalbals and Krishna himself is every one of those calves. So he said, Kanha, why have you done this? Why are you in the form of all of our friends and all of the calves? What are you doing? So then Krishna told the whole story. That, you know, this is what Brahma had done. So then I took the place of each of our friends and each of the calves. And I've been living like this for the last year. Meanwhile, Brahma returned. You see, after putting the calves and the Gwalbals in the cave, Brahma had gone back to his abode, Brahmalok, in Swarg. Just very briefly, just to go back and then come. But because Brahma's time span is much longer than ours, so for him, a moment of going and coming back, in that moment for Brahma, a whole year passed on the earth planet. So after just going and coming from his abode, he came back and then he sees, what? All the Gwalbals are sitting. Because by then, Krishna had just come and sat down in that same place where they were having lunch a year ago. And the calves were grazing over here. So Brahma comes and he sees, what? They're all there? But I thought I put them in the cave. So he goes and he checks. Oh, no, they're here in the cave. I must have been mistaken. He sees all the calves and all the Gwalbals. Then he comes back and he sees, but they're here. So he got totally confused. And then he realized, oh, I tried to test Supreme God Krishna. This is why this is happening. So then he went to Krishna and he surrendered himself. He bowed down in front of Krishna. And with Krishna's grace, then he saw the reality. He saw Krishna in the form of all of those Gwalbals and all of those calves. Then Brahma sang a beautiful stuti to Krishna, where he said, Aho bhagyam, aho bhagyam, nanda gopavrajau kasam, yan mitram paramanandam, purnam brahma sanatanam. How great is the bhagya of these Gwalbals? Although they don't have a bhagya like us. Bhagya means in your past lifetimes, what actions you've done, you have to undergo the consequences in this life. But once you get God realized, all of your past actions are burnt. So your bhagya is finished. Now you can say you just have divine bhagya. So he's saying how great is the fortune of these Gwalbals that they get to have Krishna as their eternal friend. Purnam Brahma Sanatanam Mitram. He's the eternal friend of these Gwalbals. Tad bhuri bhagyam iha janma kim apyatavyam. Tad gokule pikatamanghri rajo bhishekam. Yajjivitam tunikhilam bhagavan mukundas tvadyapiyat padarajah shruti mrigyameva. Brahma also says, if I could only be born as some kind of plant in this Braj area so that I could get the foot dust of these great saints who have this intimate relationship with Krishna. He's referring to the gopis, the Gwalbals. He says, even the Vedas are seeking the grace of these saints, these great rasic saints. Rasic means they drink the ras of that prem that Krishna gives in those leelas. Not every saint is a rasic saint. If a saint surrenders to any of Krishna's almighty forms, he's a bhakt, definitely. And he receives the anand, the bliss, the unlimited bliss of Bhagavan. But he doesn't get the ras, the prem ras. He doesn't get that. So those saints who get the prem ras, they're called rasik mahapurush. They're the highest saints because they achieved or were graced with the closest relationship with Krishna of all the saints. So Brahma is also praying to Krishna for the foot dust of these great rasik mahapurush. He says to Krishna, Athapi te deva padambujadvaya prasadaleshanugrihita evahi janati tattvam Bhagavan Mahimno Nachanya Eko Pichiram Vichinvan. Oh Krishna, I made a big mistake. I tried to know you with the power of my own intellect. He says, no one can know you. Naham na yuyam yadritangatim vidur navama deva kimuta pare sura tanmayaya mohita buddhayastvidam vinirmitam chatma samam prachakshmahe. In another place in Bhagavatam, Brahma is telling Naradji, I can't know Shri Krishna. You can't know Shri Krishna. Even God Shiva can't know Shri Krishna. He's beyond the intellect of all of us. Anyone who tries to know him through the power of his own intellect, he can only go so far. When he reaches the limit of his intellect, he's not yet reached the limit of Shri Krishna. Because Shri Krishna is unlimited. So there's no way to know him through your own intelligence. But if you receive his prasad, prasad means his kripa, his grace. if you receive even a drop of His grace, how? By surrendering to Him. Then you can know Him. Janati Tattvam. You can know Him. How? If He makes Himself known to you. And He does that when you surrender to Him. So Brahma told Shri Krishna, no one can know you through the power of their mind. But if they surrender their mind to you, then you just give them your grace, and through your grace, they can know you. So in this way, Brahma sang this stuti to Shri Krishna. And after he was done, and Shri Krishna had graced him in that way, he went and he returned the Gwalbals and the calves. He brought them back, and those Gwalbals, they didn't even feel like any time had passed. Then Krishna comes from the direction he had gone a year ago looking for the calves. He comes back with the calves, and he enters and he sits down and he rejoins them, having lunch with them. And they all just thought, oh, he was just gone for a minute and came back. And in this way, Krishna graced all the residents of Braj, all the older residents, the parents, the gopis and the gops, to have him as their own son for a whole year. So Parikshit asked Shukadevji that why did they have so much love for their son when it was Krishna as their son, as compared to when they had their regular son. So Shukadevji said, Sarvesham api bhutanam nripasvatmaiva ballabha itare patya vittadyas tadvallabhatayayavahi. He said, there's a science behind it. The most dear thing to every person is their own soul. Nothing is more dear than your own self, your own soul. Everything we do, in fact, is to get happiness for our self, for our soul. Whether it's striving for worldly enjoyments, whether it's striving for divine happiness, whatever it may be, we want that happiness for our soul. But Krishna is the soul of your soul. He is the Atma of your Atma. So as dear as your Atma is to you, the Atma of your Atma is even more dear to you. So imagine having the Atma of your Atma living as your own son in your house. How much natural prem would there be? So these saints who had come in the form of cowherders and gopis who were living in Braj, who were already, God realized, when they got Krishna, even though through that yoga maya power, they didn't know. Krishna, you can say, kept their mind in such a state that they didn't know that their son was actually him. Intellectually, they weren't conscious of that. Yet they loved their own son as much as they loved Krishna, because he was Krishna. So it shows the natural relationship that every soul has with Shri Krishna. It is our nature to love him more than our own self. So in this way, Shri Krishna performed many leelas right up until the age this Brahma leela ended when he was age 6. And there was one more important lesson to be learned from that Aghasur Leela, which we are going to apply right now while we finish with some kirtan. After that Leela, Shukadevji said to Parikshit that, you know, Krishna entered right into the body of Aghasur. And because of that, Aghasur attained his divine abode. So he said, it's no wonder. You don't have to wonder why is it so. He said, think about this. Mano mayi bhagavatim dadau gatim. He says, even if someone forms an image of Krishna, manomayi means made of your own mind. So you make a murti of Shri Krishna, a living form of Shri Krishna in your own imagination. And he says, even part of his body, maybe you're not imagining his whole body. You would just imagine any part of Shri Krishna's body wholeheartedly, and he enters right into your heart and divinizes your heart, and you attain his divine abode just from that. So if you can attain him by bringing him into your mind in that way, well, he physically entered into Aghasur, so is it any wonder that Aghasur attained the divine abode? So this is called Roop Dhyan. This is what Kripaluji Maharaj says is the heart of bhakti. In this series, I've been talking to you about meditating on the leelas of Krishna. Another way of saying that is Roop Dhyan. Roop is Shri Krishna's form, and Dhyan is just thinking about that, meditating on that. So we're going to do just some simple kirtan right now, some simple Radhe Govinda for about 10 minutes. During that time, I'd like all of us to make the effort to close our eyes and make that manomayi form of Krishna. However good your imagination is, you just make the effort and Krishna will grace you. But your bhav should be that this is real Krishna right here. This is not my imagination. This is Krishna. I can see him. I can feel him right here in front of me. Start in that way. And if you want to add in thinking about any of the leelas that you've been hearing about this week, you can also do that. So this is the dhyan we should be doing while we're doing the kirtan. Both of them go together. Then it's an effective form of devotion.
Govinda Radhe. Oh. Radhe Govinda, Govinda Radhe, Radhe Radhe Govinda, Govinda Radhe.
कृष्ण कन्हैया लाल की जय।